Now broadcasting the webcomic beacon.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the webcomic beacon. Hopefully another road to 200. But we shall see if we don't pod fade first. This is episode 101 at webcomicbeacon.com, and we are hosted on the Rampage Network, a webcomics hosting and community site at rampagenetwork.com. I'm Fess of Fessworks.com, and with me is Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
And Tanya is out right now of daisiesandshit.com because her phone, her headphones aren't working at the moment, or her mic set. But that doesn't mean that the show can't go on. Why is this not recording right anymore? Aww.
I love your enthusiasm.
Well, I hope we can reach 200 if we don't pod fade first. Oh, darn it.
Okay, well, maybe I can. Mic test, test. Test, test. Oh, man. Why? My
what
technology hates me.
Who does?
My technology.
Oh, is that all?
I don't know.
Specifically, it's the technology that hates you.
I guess so, because now I have to be really close to the microphone for some reason. Oh, this is ridiculous. In any case, oh, I meant to record an extra piece for this. This
disaster. Disaster.
This, we're off to a bad start already. Well, anyway.
Red alert.
Well, okay, the idea for this show is to talk about science fiction webcomics, or what it might turn out to be is webcomics in space! As we have a couple of guests with us who have webcomics that are in space!
Sorry, good.
Including Mark Mickus of Zordic at Zordic.com. Welcome to
Hello.
The show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Hello, everyone.
No problem. Thanks for coming. And we also have Tara Talon of Galaxian at GalaxianComics.com. Welcome to the show.
Sorry. Thank you.
Let's see. I know we've had Tara on a couple of times, and you have talked to us about your comic. We'll go into that again, but since I don't think we've had Mark explicitly talk about his comic yet, we're going to start with him.
Oh.
So there's a rhyme and reason for my favoritism here. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. Well, actually, before we start, I have to ask the question, is there some kind of subtle passive-aggressive statement being made about celebrating the week of the birth of the Son of God by talking about science fiction?
we could go into that, but no, there is no direct correlation.
Okay. Good to know. Anyway, I do the comic Zortic. It's been, it'll be actually coming up on 10 years in February.
Wow.
Yeah, so that'll count as a benchmark, right? Or the
yep.
milestone? Okay,
yep.
Good. But a lot of parody, a lot of popular references. Basic gist of it is Zortic wins a spaceship on a TV game show and flies around having adventures.
And tell us about the name of the ship, since that's kind of significant.
The name of the ship is the entire prize, because he wins it on a game show, so that was his entire prize.
Entire prize.
So there you have it. Now, you actually went through, is it a relaunch, restart, or what was it?
I did. Well, kind of James Bond did a relaunch, Star Trek did a relaunch, Battlestar Galactica, all the popular kids were doing it, so...
Well, technically Star
yeah.
Wars is still in the timeline. It's technically still a part of the timeline.
It is. Ironically, it is kind of similar to what Star Trek did. I did it before Star Trek, but it was kind of a similar thing. It fit into the story somewhat that it was a relaunch. So, again, the original universe was still there, but this is a new start, and it was a good way for new readers to jump in without having to read 10 years' worth of archives. And it gives me a chance to give all the characters just a little bit of a different twist and still keep it fresh.
Well, awesome.
And how many individual comics is that?
Oh boy. Well, one of the things with the relaunch, I went to once a week. So that's kind of kept it down a little bit, but I think
it must be thousands.
I'm thinking 3,000 something or other.
Wow.
Wow.
But just for the sake of curiosity, I was working on today. The new comic is up to 72, just since the relaunch. But there was, I think, about 3,000 before the relaunch. So about 3,072-ish.
Gosh.
Yeah, it keeps me busy.
And, we've had Tara on before talking about relaunching a comic, and I guess it's all too fitting. As what, you relaunched like 5 times?
Oh, at least.
But it's so good.
Well, not all the relaunches were comics. It was, I'm counting some of those relaunches as back when I was doing this in prose form. I relaunched a couple of times. Of course, nobody ever saw those. Those didn't really count. But comics, at least there were at least 3 different versions that actually got out into the public. But hopefully the current one will stay. I don't want to do it again.
Well, you better not redo it again. It might be too much for the people to take.
I got to agree with you there.
So in any case, so Tara, once you for those that may not have heard, what was it, episode 44 or something like that, can you give us a rundown of Galaxian?
Sure. Galaxian is the story of the crew of the spaceship Galaxian. They are testing out their new hyperdrive engine, and they discover that it doesn't work the way they expected it to, and they are currently dealing with the consequences. And there is a lot to come. I'm just really at the very beginning of the story, even after having done this for 3 years, but it's a more of a character story than about the technology or even the adventure for that matter. It's really about the characters, because that's the part that I like.
Well, that's the Doctor Who method, I suppose.
Where yeah, I guess.
Yeah, it's really about
Doctor Who
characters.
Always had lots of fun stuff, though. But they had a neat world.
But this brings us to a nice segue, which I like to call techno or no techno. And I just made that up. I have no idea what I'm talking about. But what about the use of like real, plausible, or I could buy it science versus, well, I'm just going to throw some jargon in here and that'll explain it.
The Star Wars method.
Well, it's also the Doctor Who method, too, a couple of the, like, the because TV shows will probably be brought up a lot. There are some that actual will go off of some theories, at least, or extend off of real science.
The new Doctor Who probably tends to be more science believable, I suppose.
Right, with, like, nanogenes and...
I don't think the Doctor Who was ever trying for really plausible...
Yeah, I never thought they were just insanely bad. They would make it up as they went, I suppose.
fit their world.
Right.
Yeah, everything seems to fit their world.
Yeah. There's a reason they use the word science and fiction together. It's kind of a combination of the two. You got to balance it. I mean, if I could actually build a warp drive, I wouldn't be wasting my time doing webcomics. I'd be a billionaire somewhere. So,
well, having said that... I really do admire the writers, you know, whether they're novelists or webcomic artists or whatever, who can do the science, you know, can do the research and can really back it up and know what they're talking about and make it a good story at the same time. Mm-hmm. I really admire that. I cannot. I've tried and I realize that I just don't have it, you know. So I just hope to come up with something that isn't blatantly horrible in the science department and just kind of hide everything else behind the curtain.
Do you is your science world, so to speak, based off of an existing science fiction something or other, or did you construct it yourself, or do you know what I'm asking?
I think so. Well, I guess I would have to admit that it really all goes back to Star Trek for me. That's kind of where I first decided, wow, this stuff is cool. And I guess you could say it developed from there, and then eventually I realized, you know, I can't really do a Star Trek clone. That wouldn't be right. So I started tweaking with it and evolving it and that kind of thing. But a lot of it is similar, I guess, to Star Trek.
I have to ask. Now, I've been following the story every Tuesday, and they're down on the planet. The landing party is down on the planet.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm old school Trek, so we don't have away teams. We have landing parties.
Yeah, good for you.
So the landing party is on the planet. They've gone through the ship and everything. And I couldn't really tell. Do these guys have phasers? I mean, are they armed? Do they have any weapons at all?
Nope,
or are
they
just going down with their scanners?
They have no weapons at all, and that's on purpose.
Okay.
In their world, they have not encountered very many aliens, and the general opinion so far is that if you do encounter them, you don't want to piss them off. You know, you don't want to create a situation where you could suddenly end up at war or you know, do something really bad. So end up destroying the one remaining life form of this amazing race and this sort of thing. So they are purposefully not armed.
Wow, that's different.
Well,
everybody has ray guns. Captain Kirk, everybody, they go to the planet with ray guns. That's very actually kind of unique. I don't think I've ever heard of that before. If it's in a science fiction book, then it's probably something I haven't read, because I don't really read a lot of the books, but I can't think of
There are two things to remember. One is that they are a science team, so yeah, they're not armed, but also it's not been really much of a problem for them in general, because they have not encountered anybody except for the one race, the Maraudians. And yeah, so they probably haven't really noticed the fact that they don't carry weapons up until now, and then I guess they start wondering, wouldn't it be nice? But nope, okay. they have sticks, and that's about the end of it.
They have sticks. They can throw their scanner at somebody.
And they do have... actually, no, I shouldn't say anything. So, yes, they have sticks.
No spoilers! They have sticks, yeah. Mark, what about... Mr. Mekes.
You know, Fez, can we just call you Mark, too, just to avoid any confusion?
He's not cool enough to be a Mark.
Some people
are named Bob, and they're just a certain kind of person can only be named Bob, right?
That's true.
You think about it. I don't think Fez...
Swimmers with
be,
no limbs?
I don't know. They possibly.
Okay.
But a Bob is, a certain kind of guy.
Good point.
So is a Mark.
Yeah.
Okay.
Meanwhile, back at the question, what was...
Mark, as far as Zordik goes, what about your science fiction universe?
Actually, that's one of the things with the relaunch. I've tried to get a little bit more science-y, to it. I've been, watching some the universe on the History Channel and stuff like that. But for the most part, I'm not much of a scientist. I don't want to get bogged down into it. You know, it's really about the story and, stuff that looks cool. And, that's what it really comes down to. But it does help to have some kind of understanding of the basic principles of stuff to work with. And a lot of times that can give you some story ideas. Sometimes you're hindered by it, too, because you got to stick to it.
Right.
Like I say, it's a balance of between science and fiction, and just finding that happy median in between.
Now, one thing I was kind of curious about is if when you think sci-fi webcomics or sci-fi comics in general, isn't it almost always in space? I mean, unless I can't really think too hard about other ones. What are some non-space ones?
Well, Jump Leads jumps to mind. that's kind of a
that's true. That's mostly planet based, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're traveling through dimensions, not necessarily space.
Jenny Everywhere.
True.
Doesn't really happen in space, does it, Fess?
Some of them can. Though it's not really that heavy on this. Well, science fiction, I guess it is a little bit. I mean, but ideally, the ones that, like a lot of the earlier ones, they don't even touch on the whole multidimensional part a whole lot either. So it can be. It can be almost any genre, really. Depends on who's working with it.
Could you argue that the sort of post-apocalyptic comics are science fiction? Because certainly some of those can, where you have your killer robots. And
well, there's a huge question of what is the difference between science fiction and fantasy.
Mm.
Right.
You know, where is that dividing line? And a lot of times that the biggest clearest differentiation is space. So if you see something in space, that's obviously science fiction. If it's on a planet with weird different creatures, you know, are those alien creatures or just fantasy creatures? You know.
Were they created by magic or radiation?
Sure.
I guess that's that's probably the dividing line there.
Yeah.
I suppose it's kind of a gray line, really, unless you have the actual tech in there.
Yeah. I for me personally, I've always kind of used the dividing line that if they at least make some sort of attempt to explain why the stuff is the way it is, it's science fiction. You know, how accurate the science is obviously up for debate, but, some fiction to the science. But if there's some attempt, I'll tend to call it science fiction. Star Wars, they don't even try to explain it. Hey, it could be considered fantasy, even though it's in space.
True, actually.
You could. Well, I mean,
could be
Space 1999 was half and half, because it... There were some episodes that weird stuff would happen and they didn't understand it and couldn't explain it, but it was science.
But the reason they couldn't explain it was because it was alien.
Yeah.
So there were even that there's an explanation for why it's unexplainable.
Sweet. I'm going to use that now. Whenever something I can't explain happens, we say it's alien.
I use that for my drawing a lot. You know, somebody says that doesn't look right. Well, they're aliens. That's how it looked. That's how it would look on an alien. So that
explains my love life. I don't understand. It's alien.
Let's see here. I'm trying to think of other webcomics that might. Well, what are some other space ones? Webcomics. We've got Starslip.
Starslip, Station V3, Outsider.
There's Marooned. Runners. Moontown.
See, that's a lot easier list to come up with.
It is. Yeah. Actually, back to the ones that are not set in space, I think Dicebox is mostly on a planet. Or various planets. I think they've done a little bit on spaceships, but mostly that's a very pretty one.
Dice, yeah, I was going to say Alien Dice, too. It's kind of the same principle.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of science fiction webcomics. I was coming up with a list and realizing, wow, there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah,
what about Blanket? What about Blanket Fest? That's not in space.
Yeah, but that's not really science fiction.
It could be. They have a universe with definite laws that aren't normal by our standards.
Yeah, but it's almost more fantasy. Partly because it's just of all of what's been revealed so far in Blanket is we really don't have any real tech reason why. It doesn't seem to be any sort of base in science at the moment.
But they do use sort of deductive reasoning to try and figure it out, even though they're not successful.
True. I mean, they don't even know really who they are or where they came from or anything, if they just existed at that moment or what. But I guess the line between science fiction and fantasy can be fairly gray. I mean, it's like when you think of science fiction, we've been pumping out basically ones that are in space or are on a different planet or have had visitors come from another planet, like surfboards and ray guns, which are decidedly science fiction because of either, well, partly because of the tech that's involved or involvement of something having to do in, from, or to space.
A lot of superheroes. Well, Superman would fall into that, wouldn't he? Is that science fiction?
That's just a superhero comic.
I don't know. Yeah.
Once you have a superhero, it's like, oh, that's superhero. They have like their own. It's like, what is Superman? Is Superman science? Is he magic? Is he? Oh, he's Kryptonian. Oh, okay. But I guess, I mean, I think for the most part, most superheroes are science fiction. Because they usually have some sort of explanation why, and it's usually a scientific reason why.
But then, or they're scientists who build stuff, you know, like armor suits and batarangs and all that kind of thing.
Then you got Wonder Woman, which I'd say is magic, unless they changed it since the beginning. It's like, because it's all like ancient this and that, and well, magic lasso, for crying out loud.
Yeah, she's a magic-based superhero.
Yeah, that's the thing. But they also intertwine, too. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to wring some more brains through this.
The Webcomic Beacon is hosted on the Rampage Network, a webcomics host and community at rampagenetwork.com. Don't forget that we broadcast our shows live. Tune in on Sundays at 3 p.m. Eastern at webcomicbeacon.com/live. Join our live chat room. Visit our forums for unified discussions on latest topics, collaborations, projects, events, or contests at webcomicbeacon.com/forum.
It's real Trek.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yes, it is.
They didn't need all this technical babble. They just went out and did stuff. And fired the phases and got to pretty girls, and it was all good.
Who says... Nobody says classic Star Trek. It's the original series, TOS.
Well, I've heard it referred to as classic Trek. I hate doing that, but I got the remastered ones because I don't own them. And I figured, well, if I'm going to buy them, I guess I'll get the remastered ones because at least I'll be seeing something different.
Makes sense.
Which, as much as I love Trek, but I've seen them a billion times.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Is that where they actually go through and they add?
They redid the effects of the original one. I was kind of surprised by some of the stuff they didn't fix.
Yes.
They didn't fix any of the closing credits. They all have the original closing credits. Like, wait a minute, you redid that scene. What are you?
Well, the closing credits, I think, had stuff that wasn't. That didn't make the final cut of the episodes even. So, I mean, there was stuff from like the original Cage. If I remember right, there were, you know, a couple things in there that.
Yeah. Just, or maybe they weren't on the syndicated ones. I know I've seen the uncut ones and everything. I'm like, ah,
true.
Yep. Seen that.
That's true.
But, yeah, it was all right. Mostly I think they did okay with it.
Oh yeah.
I was kind of pleased that they fixed some things. There wasn't anything I really hated. So that was good.
So what did they fix?
They redid all the shots of the Enterprise. So now you see the Enterprise actually banking and turning and doing all kinds of things like that. It's a lot prettier.
Oh, weird.
They show... One of the ones that I thought was pretty good is the immunity syndrome with the giant amoeba.
Oh, yeah. I think that's like the first... promo shot they did to try to actually get it done. That was like the team that was trying to make them buy them to do the whole remake or something like that?
I don't know. They show the Enterprise in the zone of darkness. With just the only light coming from the Enterprise, where before it was just a standard shot of a model all lit up, but they're in a zone of darkness.
Yeah.
So that never made sense. But they fixed that, and that actually looked really, really good. And they got the glowy parts of the engine right. They look really good. That looks really, really good. And there's a scene from the cage, at least in the menagerie, you see it on the view screen. But there's that shot where it that opening shot where the camera comes over the top of the ship and down into the bridge.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, they fixed that. So now the angle of the ship is right and matches up with the footage. So it, they did a good job with that from what I could see. I don't have the third set, though. Maybe when I get that. I think the cage is on the third set, the third season set. But overall, I was pretty pleased with what they did. They redid all the music.
They redid the music?
Well, they reorchestrated it with the original scores and everything. They didn't change the arrangements or anything. They just re-recorded it.
And my understanding is they didn't change any of the timings. So each of the effects shots lasted the same amount of time as the original shots.
Yeah. And most of it's quite an improvement. Like, and it's some of it's just subtle things, like where there's a window, the stars actually move instead of just being stationary like they always would be. I think on Space Station K7, you see the Enterprise actually moving in the background instead of just sitting there. So that was I mean, they did a lot of nice little things. So
neat.
Yeah. Real Star Trek. They didn't need none of that technical babble. They just... It's one thing I always disliked about the Rick Berman Star Treks was all the technical noise. Just blah, 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 blah. They had huge parts of the script, which is blank, and it had a note, insert dialogue here, and they would give it to a scientific advisor. And it just kind of got in the way of telling the story, I think. As good as Next Gen is. I think that's probably its biggest failing.
Oh, I loved Next Gen. I don't care what you say.
Yeah. Oh, I like it. It's all well and good. I just feel it could have been so much better without the babble.
I disagree. It's the way they deliver the babble that you don't need to understand.
This confused expression on their face, and they don't even understand what they're saying.
No, it's because it's like it's. Because I always took it, I said in a way, it was said in a way which I felt that I understood what could happen or the level of severity something is, blah, 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 or that sounds dangerous, or.
Well, think of it this way. You could do that without having to rely on somebody from Berkeley Physics Lab writing dialogue. You could do that very easily, in a shorthand way, like they did on the original Trek.
Yeah, they always had Scotty creating some analogy saying, you know. Something or other was like this, and then okay.
Like putting too much air into a balloon.
Yeah.
Yeah, but come on, but that's so cheesy these days. I mean,
I don't think they had to do it. I think honestly what I think is they heard all these wonderful stories about how people watching the original series thought Scotty was so cool or Spock was so cool or McCoy was so cool. They're like, yeah, I'm gonna be an engineer. I wanna be a computer scientist, I wanna be a doctor. And I think they heard that and decided they were just going to stuff science into the thing. And what they didn't understand is it was the characters that led someone to want to be a doctor or an engineer.
Yeah. That's one of the things I'm really happy with the new movie, that they did go back to the original characters, because those characters are Star Trek. And I don't care if they're different actors. You know, those characters are the foundation. That's what makes it Star Trek.
Mm.
Well, they didn't have. There's always that one original. Now I forgot what I was going to say. Okay, no wait. Okay, the Star Trek, the original cast. It's like, you know, everybody there except I always forget the blonde girl that always like passes around the clipboard, and she wears blue. And
she's Janice Rand.
Yeah, but I totally forget Yeoman that Rand. Character's name. I keep forgetting it. It's like all the other ones except that one.
She's actually only in the first season, I think.
I think
she's
you're
actually
right.
Gone after that. And then they had like a bunch of replacement stand-in yeomen, and they were always women.
Yeah. Well, Chekhov kind of replaced her because he came in second.
Yeah, he kind of did. He kind of was the youth vote, I think. At that point. But it just going back and watching it, everybody says how cheesy and lame it was. by comparison, but they never really sat and watched it. I think the stories were so much better.
Oh, yeah. And especially, you know, I mean, even the effects, compare that to anything else that was on television at that time.
Yeah.
Like Lost in Space, come on.
Yeah, that's kind of cheese there. And the...
But does it really hold up to today? I mean, it's like... I mean,
oh, it does.
No, it really, does. No. Think about that before you answer. If you go back and honestly look, is this classic / nostalgia programming you're watching, or can it actually hold up? And the answer is not for all episodes, especially if there's a big giant monster in an obvious suit.
Well, sometimes, I guess.
It can take you right out.
Battlestar Galactica and stuff like that is made for a completely different audience at a different time with different things going on behind it, where Star Trek was made in the mid-60s,
right?
Yeah. With a very different time, very different political concerns, sexual concerns, this is a totally different society.
Right.
But if you sit down and watch them, I think some of the stories hold up a lot better than a lot of things that are on TV right now, because they're better written.
Oh, certainly.
I think the bigger problem is so much of Star Trek has become ingrained in everything else that it's so, you know, if you're watching it backwards, if you're going back to that, it's kind of cliche. You know, the city on the edge of forever. Oh, he went back and had to kill a girl he loved and to save time. You know, everybody's done that now. Well, everybody's done that now because of that episode. Not
right.
It's like Citizen Kane. It's like if you go back and watch Citizen Kane right now, you wonder what all the fuss was about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody says Citizen Kane, the greatest movie, blah, blah, blah. And what they don't understand is that everything before Citizen Kane wasn't like Citizen Kane. Everything after Citizen Kane is what you've gotten used to over the years.
Yes.
It's the one that set the standard. And I think you could say the same with Trek. And even Shatner. Shatner gets a lot of grief for, you know, the way he would act and everything like that. But he was a Shakespearean trained actor acting in a TV show at a certain point in time, which was an accepted style of acting.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when we go back and look at a silent film and see how they have all these big expressive, you know, looks and expansive movements, you know, they put their hands up and all this crazy stuff that looks ridiculous to us.
Yeah. Theater acting does not translate well into when you have a camera on you.
Yeah. So it was a different kind of acting that he,
And vice versa. You can't necessarily put a movie star on a stage and expect his little subtle facial features to play to the balcony.
Correct.
So I think you probably... Yeah, I think even among Trek fans, they all seem to think Next Gen is the one to go back to, but, you know, they
they're
forget.
They're all good to go back to.
Yeah, there's something before then that started it, and you wouldn't have a Next Gen if it weren't for... for the original Trek.
This is Webcomic Beacon episode 101, Star Trek.
And
Star Trek 101.
Okay, well, let's try to get back to the subject, which is discussing webcomics that utilize science fiction themes, at least in their story or environment. And for the most part, as far as what people have seen, what do you guys think usually is the most subscribed to pre-established world? Like, you know, you got your Star Trek, Star Wars, and the like. Is there one that seems to be more prevalent than the other as far as being inspired by, as far as a set universe?
It seems like Star Trek is really the universe that inspires the most. The whole... Something else I've always kind of noticed about science fiction, I think this a lot of it can be traced back to Star Trek, is if you look at fantasy, for example, you can have an everyman, you know, the somebody's apprentice or a little hobbit getting caught up in this huge epic story. But in science fiction, it's almost always some sort of highly trained military personnel that are in the adventure. You don't normally have that, you know, common, you know, little guy getting caught up into it. And I think a lot of science fiction has that kind of military, established a military kind of background that probably comes from Star Trek.
Forbidden Planet.
Yeah.
Which is where Star Trek kind of came from, isn't it?
True.
Really protozoic.
Or the Horatio Hornblower stories.
Yes, very much. Sort of sailing ships and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would say that Star Trek is certainly one of the big influences in the comic science fiction. The other one, I would say, would be something more along the lines of either Battlestar Galactica or maybe back to Alien, with a very dark, gritty... Star Trek was very clean and very pretty. And a lot of what I'm seeing now in the comics are... More that where it's kind of like a dirty, well used spaceship.
Mm.
That's true.
I always prefer the clean universe.
More like what Deep Space Nine was trying to be, I guess, but never really succeeded.
Yeah.
I always kind of prefer the clean universe, but then I started watching Trek. So I went to see Star Wars when it came out. Yes, I'm old. And I was kind of like, you know, yeah, everything's like all falling apart. The spaceship shouldn't be like that. It should be all clean, like the Enterprise. So I was, maybe if I'd seen the other one first.
Well, not Enterprise, but the original series, you know, there's a million people all over the place, you know, so they're obviously, they have to do something. And a lot of them are probably on cleanup and fix this duty. But it's like in Star Trek, yeah, I mean, it's more, because it's if you look at Star Trek, you know, you mostly see like the Millennium Falcon and all this other sort of contraption, and it's because it's only like two people on there, and you're kind of, and that's the everyman. What is it when you have like the person that brings the audience in that's not a part of the universe?
The narrator?
No, not the narrator. The
chorus.
The audience is way in, like the new guy that was a part of Hellboy in the whole series. He was basically there to bring the audience that doesn't know anything about Hellboy into the story.
I don't know if there's a term
there
for that.
There is a term, I don't know what it is.
It's like McCoy had that function. He was like the one saying, "Well, why don't you just blast it?"
That was really
we can't do
good.
That. It's wrong. And then that would have an opening for someone to say, "Yeah, but we just can't blast it," or "Yeah, it is wrong, but we have to do it anyway, so do that."
Well, then again, I suppose Luke was supposed to be the audience's foot in for that. But I was thinking, it's like, you know, everyone has a car, and it's just like an old car. It's just falling apart, and you're always trying to, you know, keep it fixed up. That's what I was thinking of anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Which is where...
represent the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and part of that function in Star Wars was, you know, all the Empire stuff was clean and pretty and, you know, brand sparkly new, and the rebellion had to work with what was being tossed out and picking through the garbage type stuff. So I think that was the storytelling function of that. But
yeah,
right,
you know, trying to shake it up and make it look different too.
Mark, there's an RC Monroe just did an impression of you in the chat room.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I'm looking.
Nice.
Actually, my computer hates me, so it must be female.
I believe it too. It has ports.
Oh boy.
It has ports and protuberances. I believe it. Just saying.
Nice.
What about anime? Anime seems to be almost anime and manga, and they seem to be almost their own thing as far as science fiction goes. They don't seem to be beholden to a Star Trek necessarily. They seem almost as if they were manufactured organically in Japan.
Oh, duh! Anime stuff. Mechs, robots, and all that
Star
sort
Blazer.
Of stuff. Yeah, totally. That's science fiction right there. Duh.
Sure.
Robots and stuff. Mark, you're doing a sci-fi arc right now. You got robots. There's stuff that's not in space.
A couple robots, I guess.
I can't
believe robots. But that's the thing that always struck me about manga. It didn't seem to be inspired by stuff made in the United States. When we think of science fiction, we always think of the Western world, don't we?
Yeah,
true.
And even Star Lost, if we want to say Canada. But it's mostly, or Doctor Who in Britain, or anything like that. It's all sort of a Western thing, but really it isn't. And I wonder if culturally, every culture needs to have that type of storytelling, a science fiction. Even I was talking with Barry Morse at a convention, and he was saying that Shakespeare was science fiction. Something like The Tempest was science fiction. If you really thought about it and looked at it that way, you could probably see that.
This island Earth was basically The Tempest done in space, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think
it was Tempest. So I just wonder, I don't know of any science fiction from Africa, like say manga and anime grew in Japan, and we had Star Trek, and Britain had Doctor Who. I'm just trying to think of what South America or Africa had. I'm not sure.
District 9 is the only thing I can associate with Africa.
Set there.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to...
But I know what you're saying. But maybe that's the thing. It's the times and what's available at the times. Because if you say Shakespeare or like any culture, it's like maybe where science isn't... Like science
or tech isn't present.
But maybe it's
necessarily.
That's where the science fiction versus fantasy comes into play. If you don't really have science in your culture, you're probably going to go for more of a... It's probably going to come out as more of a fantasy angle.
Like Native American legends, if I could say that. Is that...
Well, kind of, sort of, but some of that is
sort of like that is more fantasy than sci-fi, would you say?
Well, I think a lot of that's
Roman
faith.
Gods.
Into faith-based and not just what's accepted as fiction. Because there's the difference between faith-based mythology and such like that versus...
Well, mythology is probably the right word there.
Yeah, fantastic stories. Stuff that's not true or based on what's already known and accepted as truth, fact, or faith. Because you can't really say a whole lot of the Native American stuff. To us it might be, but to them some of it is...
Well, it's a mythology.
Some of it's religion.
Yeah, but the point is, you would have more organic stories, I suppose, as opposed to science or technology based.
Right, and that's stories. The fantasy part that I was trying to get. There's more of a relation between fantasy and science fiction than I guess I was originally posing the question as, I suppose.
But it would be interesting. I don't know of any from certain parts of the world. It might be interesting to see. I'm sure it exists. I just am ignorant of any. Maybe I could just stop there and say I'm ignorant.
Yeah. Well, when you look at
ignorant of any particular stories or genre related stuff that's grown out of certain parts of the world, certainly there must be.
Right, but you hit on a good point when bringing up manga and anime, where. Yeah, it's very different. I mean, in fact, at least as far as the mainstream stuff that we actually hear of from Japan, it's usually mechs or something robotic. Normally, an extension of the bodily self versus taking a whole group of people and putting them out in space. Even the ones that are in space, they have frickin' mechs in space
And there's the interesting thing about it, unlike American sci-fi, Western sci-fi, generally speaking, very generally, broadly speaking, it's more about fear of technology. Technology taking over the human soul.
I don't know. It'd be a good thing to touch up on. We never had anybody anime or manga really on this show before. I mean, of course, you can punch holes in what we're talking about. You got Cowboy Bebop and even Trigun even is very Westernish. It's a steampunk actually, but still, you know what I'm saying. I mean, they can cross over, but we're trying to look at what the root is for each culture.
Well, I don't think Star Blazers had any of those robots and things like that. And
they had a robot.
The closest, did they?
They had a robot.
Well, okay, yeah, they had the little robot, but not like a mecha robot.
Well, no. Wait, Star Blazers, the guys with like... No, those are the Falcon people. Something.
No, it's like Star Blazers with a wave motion gun and Iskandar and the Cosmo DNA and stuff like that.
Is Star Blazer Japan with do they have like, Star Trek? I think.
Do they have
like, that's the
it's true.
Show that's been that they harken back to, and I'm still hearing stories that you know they've built some enormous tribute to the old Star Blazers or Space Cruiser Yamato, I guess is what they would call it. So that's obviously pretty near and dear to their hearts.
There's, I think Disney owns the rights to Star Blazers, and that scares me.
I don't want
to
hear that.
Sorry.
Yeah. Somebody's saying Trigun isn't steampunk. Okay, fine. Maybe not technically, but there's some inspirations in there. You can't deny it. It's Western. It's as if the old Western and techish. Whatever, that's what I'm trying
but there's
to
there's no giant spider robot, let's hope. That would be bad.
But,
one.
I don't know. I do want to have a show where we talk about a little bit more like manga and anime type of stuff, because it's very interesting, all this. And it's like, I don't know, it's because we all did kind of jump to space. Versus like all the other stuff, because there is like the. You know, and then some people brought up, superheroes. Some of them are a lot more science fiction based. Dr. Octagonopus or whatever.
Sure. Then you have Zatanna, which is she's magic based,
right?
And things like that. Dr. Fate.
We gotta have a discussion in superheroes again, I think.
You know, the thing is, there aren't very many superhero webcomics per se, are there?
There's a lot of them. There's tons of them.
You think?
Because of the trades, you know.
Yeah,
but
I guess.
We're not going to go into that.
I don't know.
Because we're gonna tangent again, because we've mostly been science fiction so far. Mostly Star Trek. But we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll try to wrap this up and into something logical, maybe. And then news.
Logical.
Have news, questions, comments, or advertising inquiries? Transmit them to webcomicbeacon at gmail.com or dial 1-320-310-0922.
Okay, well let's take a look at the mailbag.
The malware.
Blah blah blah.
Do you mean the mailbag? Is that what the
mailbag? Anybody know a really bad children's mailbag song?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
I'm thinking of like Blue's Clues, where they check the mail or some crap like that. Really,
we just figured out Blue's Clues because we're really smart.
You're really starting to make that word sound dirty now.
Mailbag?
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. It could be worse. It could be a man bag from the 70s. It was like a purse for men. I never owned one. I was too young and wouldn't have. If I were old enough to own one, I wouldn't have. Just saying.
Okay.
That'd be worse.
All right. I'm going to go through a couple of milestones. I'm not entirely sure if I've mentioned before, but in case I haven't, avoid spikes. At avoidspikes.dogsounds.com has hit 2 years as of December 5th.
Yay!
Life's a Witch, which was put in the show notes on last show but wasn't actually mentioned, has hit 300 strips, and that's at witchytech.com/lifesawitch. 100th strip strip milestone for Baron von Dusch's House of Pancakes. At thebaronscomic.com. Congratulations. And I think is... Wait, what is this? He quoted his... What?
Precocious comic at 400.
All right. Well, Precocious at Precocious. Is it Precocious.com or PrecociousComic.com?
PrecociousComic.com.
All right. Congratulations. And Smizer and Blade has had its first anniversary at Smizer and Blide.com. SmizerandBlyde. Nobody. A lot of the letters you don't normally use are used in that comic. So those are this week's milestones. But of course,
I have another. Oh, you I have, could add.
You okay? Go ahead.
I have another one I could add.
Go ahead.
That I read about on the webcomic list. School Spirit.
Apparently. I was just going to say.
Yeah, just hit 800. 800 strips.
Nice.
Great minds think alike.
Tanya says a comic called Tree Lobsters has hit 1 year, unless she's just playing around.
No, that's a real comic.
All right. Well, there we go. We got milestones coming out the ear today, and we're going to go over who's advertising on the Webcomic Beacon right now. As of right now, I did have somebody set up to be a sponsor for this episode, but I have not heard back from them yet or have received payment. So for now, there's no sponsor unless it's added later. But we have our Project Wonderful advertisers as, well, always. And at the top spot, we have PH Factor at phfactor.ws for all your steampunkery needs, such as gas tube. Guns that make noise, and of course goggles of all sorts over there, and you can even get some custom jobs done, I believe. Check it out and ask for more details and information. We also have let me refresh the page first to make sure the current advertisements are currently there. All right, there we go. And this one I've seen advertised on the Beacon before, but it's actually still there right now while we're doing this part of the show, so I get to mention it. Palupo, if I'm saying it correct, at palupo.com. It is billed as a comic for and by criminals. And it's kind of sticky figure-y, but it's a very recognizable style, and it's actually pretty funny. And so I would go and check that out. In fact, I believe he submitted for an impression, and I didn't get into it at the time. But after I was seeing these ads pop up and start clicking and checking out, I was like, you know what, that seems pretty funny. And so go ahead and check that up at palupo.com. And of course, one of our old time advertisers is Insert Comic Here. And that's at unamused-comics.com, and you can check that out. And let's see, the banner ad claims 50% ADD and 60% awesome. All right, well, those are our Project Wonderful advertisers. In fact, if anybody else would like to find out more information on advertising or sponsoring an episode of the Webcomic Beacon, go to webcomicbeacon.com/advertise. This helps us get to conventions. I'm serious. And advertise. We thank you for your patronage, everybody. Let's see here. And for anybody that is still paying attention and listening, you can go to webcomicbeacon.com/holidaycooking to check out the idea of putting together a holiday cooking collaboration cookbook/comic book, which I actually think is going to end up being more comic than actual recipes. But who cares? So go ahead, check that out. We're still looking for more people to sign up and say, hey, I got a strip, I got a page, I got a couple of pages. You got an idea related to holiday cooking and you can draw a comic for it? Hey, maybe you should check it out and let us know if you want to get in on that. In any case, I think that is all. Oh, wait. I do have one thing to mention. It might be a little bit too late. But you could it's still for a good cause. There is a 2009 webcomic holiday postcard fundraiser. Proceeds go to Child's Play charity, and you can check that out at wcfundraiser.com. A number of webcomic artists have created postcards for this holiday season, and I think they have some from past seasons as well, but I'm not entirely sure on that. But it includes Chris Malone of Blue and Blood, H. Caldwell Tanner of Loadwell.com, Steve Napierski, if I'm saying that correctly, of Dueling Analogs, Tina Pratt from the Paul Revere's, Brian Wilson of Geist Panic, David Stanworth of Snafu Comics, Jamie Naguchi of Angry Zen Master and Earthworld, and George, if you're taking notes for this, you don't have to write all these down, as we'll just provide the link for the fundraiser, just so you know. Also, and there's several others as well, and you can check that out, and wcfundraiser.com. That is right. If there's any webcomic-based fundraiser, let us know, and we'll make a post of it on our site. It's for charity, and so that's cool, and let us know for that. Otherwise, people can go to webcomicbeacon.com/advertise and purchase a sponsorship today. Shameless.
So there.
I think that's just about everything as far as like the notes I normally forget. Let's see here. Well, okay, I'm going to pose this to Mark and Tara.
Mm.
Not you, Savory.
Fine, be that way.
do you think there's a consensus that fantasy and science fiction probably are a little bit more hand in hand than I guess one normally would think?
Oh, sure.
I normally think they really go hand in hand.
Yeah.
There we go. And
I know in my bookstore they're all together, so.
I suppose, yeah.
Isn't it.
Was that magazine? It? Fantasy and Science Fiction? Classic magazine?
Yeah.
I suppose, yeah.
Was it Arthur C. Clarke who said that if science is truly advanced to a certain point, it should be indistinguishable from magic?
Something like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that Clark or Asimov? I can't remember.
I think it was Clark.
Was it Clark?
Yeah.
You're right. It was Clark. Yeah.
But yeah, and it, like I said, it's a pretty thin line. Where is that? You know, you were talking about Shakespeare, and you know, take Midsummer Night's Dream. You know, at that time, were fairies considered a scientific possibility, therefore could that have been science fiction at the time? Now, not so much.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, it's the whole, you know, tech versus magic, I suppose, are the obvious or the most stark differences, I should say, between the two, if you're going to draw a line through them, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think of it is all about the author's intent? Like, can an author say to themselves, I'm writing science fiction, and then blow it, and then it ends up being fantasy? Do you know what I mean? Like, can someone try to write science fiction and yet end up being not science fiction? Or
Yes, his name is George Lucas.
Now,
just saying.
Well, as long as they're not deliberately doing things in a way that they're obviously not. It's like, if they're going to do, like, I'm going to do a science fiction, you know, blah, 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 and they come up with a Dungeons & Dragons, basically, comic, well, no, you're, no. I'd have to say no. You're no.
Well, there are a lot of stories that do border, and Star Wars is certainly one of them. There's a lot of people who would say that is fantasy. Another one that comes to mind is Anne McCaffrey's Pern story.
I was thinking that, yeah.
Pern. Well, some people say that's science fiction. Some people say no, that's fantasy.
Well, I think the biggest thing for the layman is, you know, usually the elements. If you have dragons and elves and stuff, they're thinking fantasy. If you're out in space, they think it's science fiction. But, you know, Pern is an example of, you know, it's got the fantasy elements, but she did try to give it some sort of sci-fi, you know, genetic manipulation type explanations that could give it a science fiction feel, of, you know, justification if you look at it that way.
And there are also plenty of people who are more into the hard science fiction who would look at anything, just about anything that we've mentioned today, all the comics that we've mentioned, and say, no, they're all fantasy because none of them are true science. They all have stuff that's made up.
Right.
Good point.
So that's why I wonder how much of it can we say, what did the author want to do?
Well, yeah, and then to the other extreme of that, you could, you know, just push, you know, you could kind of define almost anything as science fiction, because almost all fiction didn't happen by definition. So,
yeah,
you know, at what level of that, you know, your generic CSI, so how many people define that as science fiction? Because there's weird stuff there that, you know, how realistic is it?
And then there's the fantasy element of how they have budgets to run their lab.
Right,
and,
right.
Exactly. Exactly
and
how right.
Especially their keyboard Miami. To zoom in on things. And
yeah.
Instead of a mouse.
Hey, look, we caught the reflection in her eye. Let me zoom this up to like 2,000 pixels wide. Yeah, kiss my ass.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
On a freaking cell phone camera click. Yeah. let me just. Can you?
Let me enhance that.
Let me enhance the image.
Well, yes, but did the writers of CSI think they were writing science fiction?
They have to, unless they're in total denial. They have to.
I think they're just hoping nobody notices. Whatever they're writing just brings home a paycheck.
At least who's ever writing Miami. I mean, come on. What the frick is that? Like, they got like this hologram screen or whatever the hell it is. And it's like, oh, let me just put the cell phone on this table. Boom, it instantly downloads everything and information and catalogs it and orders it and everything. Fuck you. Kiss my ass.
Or Batman's magic cell phone in that last Bat movie.
Speculative fiction.
Yeah. Speculative yeah. science, I think.
Yeah. People are saying, someone was saying in the chat room, nonfiction versus science fiction, there's a specific separation of, you know, specifically to science versus just plain nonfiction, which is certainly, you know, we could argue semantics this whole episode and or just talk about Star Trek, you know, who knows.
Yeah, let's do that.
Oh, man, I certainly hope this freaking recording thing is recording me. It's not. Ah, it kind of is. I have to boost my volume. Damn science. There we go.
Scotty. Can you check out what Denver Rod?
All right. I just get riled up on
That's
stuff.
What you get for telling Uhura to get off the bridge. You should have let her fix it, but no.
Oh, somebody says, I thought CSI was a comedy.
Oh, was it? Comedy scene investigation? Oh, my.
Hand wavium, yeah.
Hand wavium.
It would be fun to have a show talking about, like, going to the nitty gritty about, you know, Sonic Screwdriver and, you know, the other sort of. I'm just going to say this because I can't really explain it. that'd be a good show topic. Story elements.
They're not MacGuffins. What are they called? It's something that just advances the plot, but it's not the MacGuffin.
It's not a MacGuffin. It's
like the Sonic Screwdriver does things. Now, on the new show, they say it's all timey-wimey. It's sort of how he just explains everything. It's just something happens. It's timey-wimey.
Okay, wait. I got to look. What is TV Tropes?
Ah.
Tropes and a Sonic Screwdriver. I know Sonic Screwdriver is a part of that.
It's just a cool tool. It's like a lightsaber. It's just there to be cool.
Yeah, lightsaber makes no sense from a technological standpoint, but it is pretty cool. Definitely one of the coolest weapons ever, although I would want one because I would hurt myself badly.
I know. Oh, yeah.
I thought it was a mistake hanging that from your belt.
That's true. It's strange because it's a mix of technology and magic, if you want to say the Force is magic. It seems to be a mixture of that.
Well, and there's a perfect example of Star Wars. You know, when the Force was magic, it was good. Then the prequel came around, they tried to science fictionize it.
Midichlorians.
Oh, that's just microscopic bacteria in your bloodstream.
Why not just inject more of it into yourself? Like Kirk did down on that planet. You know, just inject yourself with a shot and become super telekinetic.
There you go.
You know, but they don't seem to think of that. I don't know. Maybe it's a big secret.
Probably.
I can't find it. I can't figure out.
It's in there somewhere.
It
but
says it's under magic tool, but I know that's not the word to describe.
Yeah, there's a term for it, like MacGuffin or something like that.
Yeah.
But in any case, that's an interesting example of it's a device.
That's a Chekhov's something or other. Chekhov's phaser or Chekhov's gun? Chekhov gun. No. I'm thinking of something else.
Oh, Schrodinger's cat.
Nah, maybe.
No.
Yeah. Deus ex machina. Maybe that's it. But that sure seems more like it's what wraps it up. But anyway,
it was a one word thing, like two or three syllables.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a physical device. It obviously has technical working parts, or it's technology. But at the same time, a Jedi can channel his force power through it. So to absorb the force lightning there, like Mace Windu did. Mace Windu. He got thrown out of it. But. So there seems to be some element of the Jedi's force power in it at the same time. It's very strange.
Mm-hmm.
Sage says I'm wrong.
Well, he's been saying that we've been wrong this whole time. it's like a plot device, basically.
Yeah.
Well, the transporter would be another one, because that mainly existed at Felicia first to
save Kirk at the last instant.
No. It was there so that they could move the plot along, so they didn't have to spend 8 hours in a shuttle. They just go, zip, all right, we're down to the planet, let's go. Let's get this plot moving.
And it's cheap.
True.
It was inexpensive, too.
But there is some technology behind that, too. I mean, people have tried, and there's designs and theories all about matter-to-matter transport.
Mm-hmm. I think it's amazing how many technologies that came out of Star Trek that people are desperate to try to duplicate. You know?
Sliding doors. Yeah. That's the one you always... You remember, you'd hear about that one, the guy who wanted to make a sliding door and asked how they did it on Star Trek, and they had to tell him it was a special effect. Maybe that's just a story, but it's a good story.
And then grocery stores everywhere.
Yep. Yeah.
The sick bay... in sick bay with the monitor on the wall that reads all the life signs.
Mm-hmm.
And how they like to do or try that kind of thing.
I've been hearing about injections that just like they used to use on Star Trek that don't actually go through the skin.
Hyposprays, yeah.
Hyposprays, I'm hearing about those now.
Well, yeah. Well, it's micro needles, basically.
Yeah. Did anybody see the special? I think it was on History Channel, how William Shatner saved the world.
Yeah. <I've seen.
laughs> And it was all this sort of stuff, the stuff from Star Trek that was in use now.
Yeah. Cell phone doesn't count, even though it flips up. But
yeah, how come none of my cell phones make that noise?
Hey,
mine does.
I found this great mod you can do with a cell phone. if you have a Bluetooth device, you can. I'll try to remember to get the link so you can post it, Fess, because it's cool.
Okay.
It's these guys have worked out a mod so you get a toy communicator, the flip-up communicator, and you can gut it and put a Bluetooth device in it and use it as a phone.
Oh, that's
awesome.
And
it'll beep and chirp, you flip it open and everything.
I have one of these toy little communicators.
Yeah?
Yeah. But it's pretty cool. They forgot how to mod it. So when it calls, it goes, boop, boop, and you cheep, 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 you know, hello. But it's pretty cool.
So I used to think that one of the most important things you had to do when you were writing science fiction is come up with a really cool tool. Something awesome that they could all have.
Like a tricorder or a...
Like a tricorder. I did try a sonic screwdriver. I did try to invent one that didn't really work out as well as I was hoping.
I like the goggles they use where they can see in the dark with the goggles. They're pretty cool.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool tech. I mean, it seems so simple, but at the same time, it's like, hey, that's neat. They're not bulky or anything, like night vision goggles.
Mm-hmm.
They just seem like a pretty...
Yeah, back to the subject, apparently, at the end of the show. So what you're saying is you think one of the things that that's normally seen, or are you saying should be done, is basically...
Oh, no, I don't mean should be done. I'm saying that's what, when I first started doing science fiction, and particularly comics, I guess, because it's more visual, I was thinking, all right, they need something cool. They need a lightsaber. They need a sonic screwdriver. What can I have them have? And
an identifiable thing that's Galaxian.
Yeah, you know, something that when the cosplayers eventually come along, they'll eventually make one. Because they have to have it, because it's cool.
Good idea.
Zordik, anything in your universe?
You got the gloves.
I got the gloves now. I actually got those things
going. Yeah, the gloves are kind of cool.
Yeah. Those are things that I saw from, you know, some TV things that are being worked on, and did that, and it gave them a good excuse for wearing the mittens, which they never had before.
Yeah. Otherwise, other than it's cold out, you know.
Well, yeah,
it's cold in space. I need my mittens.
But it is interesting how, like, some shows, and I think Sequest is a good example, how some shows try to incorporate near future tech. And you saw that they had that virtual probe that they would send out from the Sequest, mm-hmm. and Hitchcock would wear the glasses, and she'd have the gloves, and sort of, you know, she's controlling it by telepresence.
Right.
Surrogates, I guess. That's all telepresence, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. That's super future tech, but I would think something like remote controlling it with the gloves. So they did that in Minority Report, too, where he had the gloves. He could, like, virtually move documents around on a screen and things.
Right, right.
It's always fascinating to see what they come up with.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's a big part of it, is the science fiction. One of the things that makes it really stand out is the visual possibilities. And I think for me, that's one of the appeals of doing it as a comic, is, you know, you can do this real cool gadgety stuff, you know, great, you know, alien landscapes and alien creatures, and just kind of go nuts visually.
Yeah, and you don't have your budget guy telling you, I'm sorry, we cannot afford to make this amazing set that you wanted.
You've got to cut the scene for time. Things like that.
Right.
You have to recycle this costume. You don't have to do that.
The same corridor over and over and over and over.
Hey, there's a great essay on
that. Although, actually, you know what? I'm wrong. In webcomics, you do get that, because we all do the cut and paste
cut
business.
same
corridor over and over and over.
Yeah.
There's a great essay about Doctor Who, about how it's all corridors. That's all it is. And you think about it, see enough Doctor Who. Yeah.
Yeah.
All they do is run through hallways. It's true.
I can see that.
Yeah, I was watching the commentary, and David Tennant and Christopher Eccleston, you know, they're both like, oh, and here's the running down the corridor. yeah, excellent. But we are all out of time for this. I would like to reapproach this subject a little bit more focused on a particular idea or something like that. Even invite people that are knowledgeable and interested in
robots.
Robot angle, a little bit more into the fantasy angle, or like anime differences, or anime versus East-West fiction fantasy basis with tech, things like that. Good ideas for episodes and shows.
I earned my pay for the week.
Yeah.
I don't get paid anything, so that's why my ideas are kind of lame. But there you go.
It's all right. people can check out webcomicbeacon.com/calendar for when we have our upcoming shows. I am starting to schedule them out in advance. But in the next week, wait, is it next week? Let me click that and actually look at it.
See what it says.
Next week, we are going to be discussing fan fiction with Ben Carver of Point Guardian, and another one I keep forgetting. Damn it, because that's the one that's updating. But tune in next week for that. And then after that, we have R.C. Monroe from Out There going to be on. So, you should never have a reason not to come listen to the Webcomic Beacon, damn it. We broadcast live almost every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern at webcomicbeacon.com/live. check it out. This has been Fess of Fessworks.com.
This is Mark of AutumnLake.com.
This is Tara Talon of GalaxianComics.com.
This is Mark Meckes of Zortik.com.
That's all for now. Tune in next time at WebcomicBeacon.com.
I try to find like something funny and put it at the end of the show. It's the zinger. It's after the end of music.
And you want me to say one, don't you?
No.
Oh, okay.
This is not the gig cast.
Oh, okay.